And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. Man, am I loaded for bear today. I've got so much research in front of me, but I tried to choose articles that I find very intriguing and interesting. And of course, yes, maybe I'm being a little bit selfish. Okay, but I like it. I mean, obviously, you got to be able to get some information that's good that you can put into practice. So here goes. I came across an article, and they're asking the question, does taking a daily dose of a flower, it's an herb called echinacea, does it lengthen one's lifespan? Well, I'm going to read this to you. If you give 2 milligrams of an echinacea purpurea every day from adolescence and onwards, the animals, in this case was mice, they reach a greater age. This is according to researchers at McGill University in Canada. Especially during middle age, which is when mice and humans, that's why I'm reading this to you, they can become very susceptible to cancer. And they're showing that this particular plant, echinacea, it reduces mortality. That means you don't die as soon. Echinacea is an immunostimulant. Immunostimulant. That means it stimulates your immune system to do a much better job. So you have your choice. Do you want a subpar performance of your immune system, or do you want a great response by your immune system? They go on to write that extracts of this plant or this flower, they stimulate the immune cells and it gives protection, for example, against colds. So if you've already got a cold, echinacea helps your immune system to fight the illness more quickly. That means you get over it quicker. Animal tests have shown that the effect of echinacea to be so strong that mice that actually have tumors live longer if they're given echinacea. That comes from the Journal of Alternative Complementary Medicine, 2001, June, Volume 7, pages 241 to 251. I don't know about you. Just that little tidbit of information from that journal is very interesting. So when you give echinacea to animals that already have advanced tumors, they live longer if they're given echinacea. You might want to remember that. Cancer is more common in middle-aged people. Well, that makes sense, especially those in their 40s and 50s. It is around this age that the body starts to become more susceptible to viral infections. And you're probably thinking, well, why is that? Well, number one, this may be because the body's production of immune cells starts to decline around this age. Now, does that mean I'm saying that when you hit 40 and 50 that maybe your immune system doesn't produce as much or as many good immune cells to protect your body from infection? Yes. And here's point number two. This also can be because the quality of the immune cells begins to decline. So you may have immune cells, but if they're not doing their job, if they're low quality, then that's a problem. So if you have a healthy cell that turns into a cancer cell, or if it's infected by a virus, well, you need your immune system to get rid of those cells. You need to be able to recognize that and say, hey, you're not a normal cell. Okay. Here's a study right here. This is why the Canadians wanted to know if mice would live longer if they were given a small amount of echinacea in their food each day from a very young age, and thus reduce the risk of developing cancer and viral infections. Okay? The answer is yes. Now, there is a there's a graph. It's the number of days that mice lived versus their survival percentage. I know you can't look at the chart I'm looking at, so I'm going to try to make it sound simple. What they did was, when they gave them just a little bit of echinacea every day from a young age until they passed away, they just counted the number of days. And so their starting point was, when the mice were greater than 13 months of age, that was their metric. They said, okay, let's start keeping score once they hit 13 months of age. Because probably for a mouse, that's probably the human equivalent of 40 to 50 years old, or in your 50s. Okay. Beyond 13 months of age in a mouse, 74% of all the starting mice were still alive in the echinacea consuming group. You want to guess what the control group survival rate was at beyond 13 months? It was only 46. So the ones that took echinacea, 74% were still alive after 13 months. And those that did not take echinacea, only 46. Let me see. Man, those numbers. You tell me. Do you like advantages like that? Okay, here it is right here. They showed in the research study that the supplement echinacea, it actually increases the manufacture of immune cells in the bone marrow of the mice, as shown in the figure below. And I realize you can't see the figure, but I'm looking at them right now. They measure a type of a white blood cell called a granulocyte. Then they measure one called a polynuclear granulocyte, which is a neutrophil. Then they measured a different form of a neutrophil. Then they measured lymphocytes. They also measured what are called natural killer cells. And I promise you, this is what you want. You want plenty of natural killer cells, because they do all the great work that you want them to do. They do all the right things. Then they also measured what are called monocytes. And so I'm looking at every category of each and every white blood cell where they measured the activity. And man, it's incredible. Across the board, there's not one type of immune cell, whether it's a lymphocyte or a neutrophil or a monocyte or a natural killer cell. Would you care to guess they all improve with echinacea? You know, this should be, the wheels of your brain should be turning right now. If I'm telling you that all immune cells improved in quality, but also in quantity too, that's called a win-win. Here's the mechanism right here. One theory that the Canadians put forward is that the sugar chains in the echinacea plant, they're called arabinogalactans. They're absorbed by the immune cells, which prompts the production of proteins such as interleukin-1 and interferon beta-2. These proteins, what they do is they activate your natural killer cells. And I'm telling you, buddy, the natural killer cells, you want those to go on search and destroy missions. If any cell or tissue in your body starts looking a little bit weird and funny, you want those natural killer cells on the ball, because they say, excuse me, you don't look normal, we're going to get rid of you. And if your immune system removes abnormal cells, guess what's supposed to happen? We want your body to replace the abnormal cells with good, strong, healthy, viable cells. Okay? Another possible mechanism is that the alkylamides from the echinacea compounds, they interact with the CB2 receptors, and that in turn is a different pathway, how they could activate and turn on the natural killer cells. The researchers don't exclude the possibility that there's yet another mechanism that's responsible for the life-lengthening effect of echinacea, but there's no doubt in their eyes that echinacea extends the lifespan of mice. That comes from biogerontology. I guess bio means life, and gerontology would be the study of a mammal that's aging. I'm sure it's a human being. But that's interesting right there. One of the articles I started to copy off, but I didn't even look it up. I just didn't. It talks about the compounds of echinacea that actually kill cancer cells. This is so intriguing. So do you like that first one right there? So, you have to understand that if you want to live, you must have an immune system that does its job, and it works very well and efficiently. Does that make sense? And so, like I've said before, some of the studies that look at what's the difference between a human being that lives and they can breathe and take care of themselves and they can cook their own meals and they can still provide for themselves and they can go wherever they want and they can do work, but they're 95 years old. Well, their immune system usually works about 10% better than somebody that passes away at age 55. It just does. And so here you go. Echinacea, that may be worthy of your consideration, so read the article for yourself and decide, is this the sort of thing that you want to engage in? It's so interesting. Anyway, here's another one that I kind of laughed and laughed about. Now, some of this is just slightly negative, but I'm going to read it nonetheless. But just take it all with a grain of salt. The title of this article is, let me just read this to you. Okay. Some people say that hard workers work themselves to death. Men and women who work themselves to the bone in search of betterment are unlikely to live to an old age, and the stress of the commitments they impose on themselves reduces their life expectancy. That sounds logical, doesn't it? But according to psychologists at the University of California, the reverse is actually true. I don't know that I want to read all that stuff to you. Okay. I'm going to cut to the chase and just tell you what the researchers found. It came from the Terman Life Cycle Study up until the year 2006. And what they did was, there was a gentleman by the name of Lewis Madison Terman. He was a highly controversial figure. He was an American psychologist. I'm not going to spend your energy and time listening to all the things that he believed and thought, but I'm going to say on the positive note, he was very interested and fascinated by very gifted children. Okay? And what he did was, the ones that were born back in the 1920s, well, he followed them up in the year 2006. He wanted to find out, what did they do? Okay? So here's a punchline right here. The researchers measured the career success that the men had achieved. And, of course, you got to understand, back in the 1920s, does this make sense to you, that it's usually, if you're a traditional man in the 1920s and a traditional woman, the husband was willing to make the greatest risk of all time and put himself out there in the work environment so he could work very, very hard. And in turn, that would enable the wife to stay at home. And then she could take her responsibility seriously, which, what's the main responsibility for a woman? Well, is taking care of the kids and having children. I mean, men can't do that. I don't think I've seen a man give birth to a baby. You talk about a great blessing. What is the greatest way that a woman could bless her husband? Giving him children, okay? But if a man works really, really hard, then what he can do is he can provide food for the children, and he can buy them clothes, and he could pay for the cost of living. And I would say that would be one definition of a good man, because good men, they work to provide for their families. And so the researchers measured the career successes that the men had achieved using criteria that including occupational classification according to the current census of the time, job prestige, job performance, roles of leadership in the workplace, honors and recognitions received, and annual income. The researchers divide the men into three categories: those that were not successful, those that were moderately successful, and those they deemed successful. When the researchers looked at the age that the men had reached, the figure below emerged. And basically what it's showing, you can't see the graph. Let me see, I've got the graph right here. I'm looking right at it. It says, the more successful the men had been, the longer they lived. Isn't that interesting? Now here's the next point. There's a word that they used over and over. It's called conscientiousness. And so they're saying that a successful career actually lengthens one's life. Now there's also a psychological trait that is associated with a longer life, but also determines how successful you are in your career. It's called conscientiousness. They go on to write that conscientious people have self-discipline and ambition, and they think about what they're going to do before they actually do it. Maybe that's think before you act. and they're tidy and they're organized and they pay attention to detail. Above all, they're hard workers. You know what that doesn't say? It doesn't say they sit around blaming others and that they're victims and they've had a hard life. It says they do their job and they're hard workers. Okay. The rest of it says conscientiousness, together with openness, extroversion, agreeableness, and neuroticism, that goes up to make the big five. These are the five most important determinants of personality. I don't know that I understand all those, but I'm just reading what it says. Studies have shown that openness, extroversion, and conscientiousness, they go together with a longer life. That's according to the American Journal of Geriatric Psychiatry, 2008, May, Volume 16. Now, this right here, the other one, there's another chart. I'm looking at who has the lowest risk of dying. And what they're doing is they're looking at men that were the least successful. That's just based on their performance, I guess. Maybe job satisfaction's in there, too. Versus the most successful. And basically, it's just saying when you do great work, you tend to live longer and have the least risk of dying. It's a huge number. This chart is so small, though. I can't really... It's a pretty big number, though. It really is. So when you are not successful, you know what I thought of, though? If I'm not mistaken, I think it's Colossians. You know, from the New Testament of the Bible. I think it's in Colossians 3, but I can't really remember if it's verse 16, 22, 20, 24. Maybe it's 24. But doesn't it say, whatsoever your hands findeth to do, do it with all your might, as serving God, not man. Now, there's an attitude adjustment, isn't it? What if that was your mindset every day that you walked out the door to provide for your family? And just think, if you have some extra left over, then you can, in turn, you can help people that are in need. If you come to Jacksonville, all you have to do is drive through a parking lot of a very large store or a street corner, and you'll find quite a few people with signs up saying, hungry, want food, need money. But there's people that can be helped. Okay. Now here's another one right here. Here's the conclusion. It says if you're conscientious, and of course what their definition was, they said these people have self-discipline. I bet they show up to work on time. And it says they also have ambition, which means you don't have to tell them what to do. They just get in there and say, I see the work in front of me. Please, let me edit, let me do it. And they think about it before they act, which means they go, okay, what's the best way to do this? Or is there something I need to learn so I can do my job better? Or what questions do I ask? It says they're tidy. Well, I need to take a note on that because I have room for improvement. Organization, and they pay attention to detail. Wow. Above all, a conscientious person is a hard worker. It says, if you're conscientious, even if you do not have tremendous social success, your mortality risk is lower. You know what? I'm okay with that. I hope you are too. You can understand. Not everything in this life is about making as much money as possible or being in the highest social circle. You got to think in eternal terms. And you know what? Yep, that's true. You know where you want to end up, and you got to ask yourself, is this taking me away from that or moving me closer to it? It says, so hard workers, they always live longer regardless of how successful they are. Okay, that's that. I don't know if you liked that article or not. I did. Because there seems to be a growing... concept or idea that's being put forth with frequency that work is not a good thing. But God knows what he's doing. When he gave us work to do, he knew this was the way to help us to emotionally function at a much higher level than people that don't work. Okay? And of course, you know what, I'm not trying to rag on anybody here, but the benefit is all yours if you work and you work hard. You win. Personally, I think it makes God happy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You want to please God? work with all your might, serving God as serving God, not man. Okay, here's article number three. Does anybody out there want to have as many wrinkles as possible on their face, or do you want as many wrinkles as possible on your body? Well, of course, we already know the answer to that. So here it is right here. This is kind of an interesting experiment. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people that don't like this because there's just so many people that just abhor chocolate. They hate it. They want nothing to do with it. Of course, I haven't seen the chocolate stocks drop here recently. It says scared of getting wrinkles, and then it says cacao stops skin aging. It says a daily dose of 12 grams of the polyphenol-rich cacao keeps your skin young. Korean dermatologist at the Seoul National University of Boramae Hospital. I may be mispronouncing that South Korean hospital. They discovered that cacao makes women's wrinkles less deep and increases the elasticity of the skin. Now, hey, I'm telling you, that is what you want. You want your skin being more elastic. So listen to this, okay? Their human study, published in the Journal of Nutrition, suggests that cacao, which that's really chocolate, or that's what they use to make chocolate, it diminishes the most important component of skin aging, the damage to the skin caused by ultraviolet radiation. You know what I'm talking about. If you go to the beach once a year for a little bit of rest and relaxation and breathe in some good salt air and put your toes in the sand and get out there in the surf, that's probably great fun. It's very relaxing. It's probably rejuvenating. But do you want to lay on the beach 6 hours on one side and 6 hours on the other? No. You're going to destroy your skin with radiation. You're not used to it. But I know you've seen people, they have overdone the sunbathing. Okay, here's the study. Yeah, you know what their skin looks like when somebody's been a sun worshiper. Okay, the Koreans did their trial with two groups of 31 women. The women were aged somewhere between 43 at the low end, all the way up to 86 years of age. And signs of their skin aging could be seen in the corners of their eyes, and so that's where they looked to make all their measurements, okay? One group consumed a placebo every day for 24 weeks, and the other group consumed 12 grams a day of a fat-free cacao powder made by the Belgian company Barry Callebaut. I don't really know that Belgian company, but they're famous for the chocolate. The powder provided the women with 320 milligrams of cacao flavanols each day. And you're thinking, well, how did the women do it? It said the women just simply dissolved the powder in hot water and drank the mixture. So I guess in South Korea, they make hot chocolate there too. They said, by the way, Barry Callebaut, the company that provided the chocolate powder, they didn't fund the Korean study. The researchers were funded by the Korean government. So it's not like the chocolate manufacturer was saying, hey, we're paying you, so we want to have a good result here. Okay, here's the results. The elasticity of the skin of the women who had taken the cacao or the chocolate during the experiment increased by a few percent, and the depth of the wrinkles decreased. In the placebo group, however, the women's skin elasticity decreased. That means it wasn't as soft and supple and pliable and bendable, and their wrinkles became a little bit deeper. So, you already know what I'm going to say. Like anything else, a person has to be consistent. You know what that means? You do it faithfully. And so the women in the study, they took the 12 grams of the fat-free cacao powder and put it in hot water, and they did this every day for 24 days. Okay? 24 weeks. I said days. I didn't mean that. Sorry. I have all the charts and the graphs in front of me. They're not going to make... I can't really describe them. It just shows that the women, that did the cacao powder, they did much better than those that don't, because what they did was they exposed them to ultraviolet radiation, find out what's going to happen. At the end of the supplementation period, the researchers exposed the women's skin to ultraviolet light, and then they measured the intensity at which the skin started to become damaged. How'd you like to be in that study? Yes, ma'am, we're going to put you under an ultraviolet tanning booth lamp, and we're going to see how quickly we can damage your skin. The intensity at which this happened was significantly higher in the women who had consumed the cacao or the chocolate than in the women in the placebo group. Do you get that? That means the skin was hardier, stronger, more resilient. Folks, one of the concepts that you've got to put into your mind is, what do we do to make you hardier and more resilient? Now, let me ask you a question. I know this is simple. If you smoke 3 packs of cigarettes a day, does that make your lungs more resilient? Well, no, it does not. Now, if you eat an apple a day, does that make your lungs more resilient? Yes. An apple a day has been shown to greatly improve the efficiency of the lungs, and it's more protective. They go on to write that the most important component in skin aging is damage caused by ultraviolet radiation. That would be called sunshine. And it just goes on to show that, here's a conclusion right here. This present study showed that 24 weeks of daily consumption of coca flavonoids improved skin wrinkles and elasticity in human skin, the Koreans wrote. Skin elasticity began to improve after 12 weeks, that'd be 3 months, of supplementation. It says the effect was maintained while supplementation continued for a total of 24 weeks. They're just saying, in conclusion, regular cocoa flavanol consumption may be a good strategy for the prevention and the progression of skin photoaging. That's talking about sun exposure. All right, if you want to join me on the radio, there's a phone line officially open at 903-586-5257. You can call and ask whatever questions you like, especially if you have a question on what do you do to improve yourself. You know, the concept of you're your own advocate, you really need to grab onto that. You do. You need to be completely responsible for your health. Don't turn that over to anybody else. Remember, you can say no. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Yes. I just turned 70 in August, and 2 years ago I had a bout with vertigo. And then I haven't had, this is my first one, and then 2 weeks ago I had another little bout with it. And I wonder what I could do about that.
Well, there's a procedure. It's called the half somersault procedure. It's probably the most effective one of all time. So there's a website called YouTube.com. And if you went to the website called YouTube, can you do that?
Yes.
Okay, just type in half somersault. You know what a somersault is? You've seen kids and little girls in gym class. It's called the half somersault procedure for vertigo. If you type that in, you'll either have a man or a woman perfectly demonstrate to you exactly how to do the procedure, and that'll get the rocks out of your ears, and you'll not have vertigo anymore.
Okay.
So as simple as that. I know I'm making it sound simple.
Uh-huh.
But you have to kind of get the hang of it, but if you'll just follow the directions and try to imitate the person demonstrating how to do the half somersault, I bet you'll be really pleased and get great results.
Okay, and another thing I'm kind of concerned with was I have a little, my ears, this first time I've ever had, my ears are itchy all the time, on the inside.
And I know that sounds weird, but I usually think that's a fungal infection.
Okay. One of them, just from time to time, have a little ooze to it, just a little ooze.
Yeah, I would say that's probably a fungus. Do you by chance eat a lot of sugar?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I would suggest...
I'm cutting back since you turned 70. I'm cutting back.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? Here's what I would encourage you to do. If you want sugar, once you eat an apple or have a bowl full of strawberries, or you say, oh my goodness, I want something sweet. I'm going to eat a bunch of raspberries. All that stuff would be good sugar for you. But if you cut back on the sugar, that's one of the ways to kind of starve the fungus out. You can always try what's called ear oil. And if they, and the ear oil costs like about $7 or $8 for a bottle of it at the health food store. But you're looking for one of the ingredients to be garlic, or use garlic oil.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
All right. Thank you much.
You're welcome. Have a great day, and thank you for your phone call, sir.
You too.
Bye. Thanks. Bye. All right. There is a phone line open, 903-586-5257. If I speak about fungus just for a brief moment, fungus is just doing its job. It's trying to clean it up. And so if there's a lot of gunky debris and sugar laying around, you're going to have fungus growing. So if you clean the body from the inside out, you win. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Yes, sir. I had a question actually concerning my wife. Here lately, in the, I guess the past month, she is, when she goes to the bathroom, she's noticing blood in her stool. What can we do to help her with that?
Well, there's two possibilities. Either she has a polyp that's bleeding, which means she needs to go to the medical doctor immediately and have that checked out, or she's got a hemorrhoid.
Okay.
And so... So does she say that she feels something when she takes tissue to clean herself after going to the bathroom?
No, she doesn't.
Well, there are. I'm sorry. Go ahead. No. You go ahead, please.
It kind of shocks her every time that she goes to clean herself and stuff. She's thinking, well, there's blood again, but no pain. No, there's no pain involved.
Is the blood bright red?
Bright red, yes.
Okay, I'm not trying to be negative by saying this, but the number one symptom of a colon cancer is bleeding that never goes away. So I'm not saying that to be mean or rude, but I'd rather you take action and get it checked out. So if she has a hemorrhoid, most likely there's just too much back pressure on the blood vessels down there. And so increasing fiber can help that, and going for daily walks can help that. But I would prefer that we go and get this checked out as quick as possible to make sure it's not something else.
Yes, sir. Okay.
Because if she had like a polyp that was bleeding, they can remove that very easily and quickly and efficiently.
Now, would that be consistent? Would it happen every time, or would it happen just ever so often? Because it's not every single time, but it's almost every time.
That's enough for me to be concerned. And so out of my concern and the abundance of caution, I'd recommend that she go get checked out.
Okay.
Because if it is an internal hemorrhoid, then I can tell you everything you want to know about that.
But she'd be feeling pain with that, wouldn't she? Or she'd be
No. I can tell you when they're external hemorrhoids. A person says, "Hey, my bottom itches," or "I can feel them bulging out of the rectum when I go to the bathroom."
Right.
But you can have internal hemorrhoids very easily. How old is she?
53.
Oh, she's too young to have any problems.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Good. But take off on that right there, and let me know what happens.
I will. Thank you so much.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. If you'd like to join me on the radio, the number is 903-586-5257. I don't even know how many people over the last, I'm going to say 32, 33, 34 years have said, oh, yeah, I've had a bleeding for 2 years, and it ended up being colon cancer. So I'm not saying it to be negative, but I'd rather be open and honest than not. Good morning. How are you today?
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Tingling in my thumb tips and occasionally right hand becomes severely numb.
Do you have a good strong grip?
Yes.
Okay. How long has the tingling been going on in your thumbs?
Weeks, if not months.
Does it hurt if you shake hands with a man that has a firm handshake?
No.
Okay, so can you grab like a tree limb and hang from it, no problem?
Yes.
Okay. All right, this is going to be weird then, because usually I'm thinking about that nerve is being pinched that's going through that tunnel to the thumb. So you got that radial nerve.
Right.
So I would say somewhere in the elbow. Do you tend to sleep with your arms bent, with your hands under your head?
I end up that way. I start out with my arms straight out.
Well, and that's really what I want you to do. If you could find a way to keep your arms straight out all night long, this may correct itself, because it just takes a little bit of compression on one of those vessels or nerve to cause tingling in the thumb. But usually you're going to have the highest amount of thumb tingling when you have your arms and elbows and shoulders bent where your hands are like up under your face or your head or your pillow. But if you can keep them straight out in front of you, the way to do that is just to get like a feather pillow and just kind of hug it all night long.
Okay.
Or in your case, if you have a pet timber wolf, he could lay beside you in the bed and you could hug him all night.
I do that. Okay.
Well, the other thing is you can start stretching those fingers out. But what I would look for is I'd probably look for a muscle that's too ropey and tender and tight right inside the fold of the elbow.
I've got that.
Okay, so I would probably do that. Do you have anybody that can massage your arms and hands for you?
Yes.
You want to do that and see how many times they hit a spot that's really, really tender. Because if they do, you're going, oh, now I know why my thumbs are tingling. Muscle's so tight, it's pinching the nerve. But yeah, try those things.
All right. Very good.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye. The other thing that you can do, and I know this sounds very simplistic, you could just rub castor oil on the arms and the hands to see if that reduces the tingling. The number at the station, if you want to call me, is 903-586-5257. I had a woman that called me this week on the phone. I'm not saying it was funny, ha-ha, but I could scarcely recognize her voice because her laryngitis was so severe and so bad. And the poor thing, but if you knew this woman, she's absolutely the sweetest human being that walks the earth. And she says, I've got laryngitis so bad. What can I do? And I think I gave her like four or five different things to do, maybe three things. I know I gave her three at least. But one of the options that I gave her is just all she had to do was just rub castor oil all over her throat. You know, that's outside the larynx or the voice box. And she calls me back the next day, and guess what? I could totally recognize her voice. I can understand her. You know what it's like for somebody to have horrible, horrible laryngitis and they try to speak, but it just won't come out. There's actually a tonsil that's found right over the voice box or the larynx. It's called the laryngeal tonsil. And so I'm just guessing that her tonsil was pretty full of debris and waste, most likely an infection. And so, man, I thought, this is amazing. You have to remember that wherever you rub and apply castor oil, you do greatly improve the ability of the body to increase blood flow. And so, I know it's a simple concept, but whatever problem that a person's having, you really want to improve blood flow. So, I don't know, just pick a problem. Let's say somebody has the beginnings of Alzheimer's or dementia. Do they need to sit down and have less stuff to do and to be real sedentary? Oh, no, 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 no. What they need is they need more blood flow to the brain. So if there's a CAT scan or an MRI done, it shows some white plaque of the white matter. That's a sure indication that we need to move the body more. So I don't have the studies directly in front of me where I could read the actual stats, but I thought I could find them. No, I can't. I'm not organized enough. I need to learn how to be more conscientious when I do the program, right? But it shows that when someone starts walking and that they're not really used to it and they walk briskly, oh my word, you greatly increase the speed and the volume of blood flow to the brain and to the eyes. So does that make sense that if you want to heal anything, it could be an eye problem, it could be a problem with the brain, it could be a heart issue, a lung issue, a person could have a fatty liver, you could have kidney disease, you could have all sorts of problems, arthritis, you're physically weak. Well, the solution is you've got to find some reasonable way to get your body moving. Because movement is life. I know this is a drastic analogy, but what happens if the blood stops moving? Well, you die. What happens if your lungs stop moving, or your diaphragm doesn't contract and you can't draw air into your lungs? Well, that's not good either. And so movement is so critical, so you have to find some way to get your body moving because that's your nutrient delivery system. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. I wonder if you can help me figure out what's going with my hands.
Okay.
Started primarily on my right hand, and it's like needles. I sometimes get to my right underneath where the fat of the thumb is inside the hand.
Mm-hmm.
And but primarily now it hurts my wrist. I mean, just to the point that I cannot hold a bend or turn.
But is it just inside the wrist? Beneath the thumb?
Now it's all over, just primarily on my wrist, all around. And it goes and comes, but it's just becoming more consistently, and it gets hot, and then sometimes it just very tender, and sometimes goes away, and sometimes comes back. And somebody said that I may have what they call carpal tunnel.
But then
the other side now, I started doing the same. It started on my left thumb as well, getting the soreness and the tingling. And not as bad, it's very mild compared, but it's just sore. But it's getting to be like even when I'm sleeping, if I move or touch, it hurts.
Is there anything that makes it better?
No.
Do you have any female relatives that have rheumatoid arthritis?
I don't know any of all my relatives.
Okay, so does that mean you were, the stork didn't tell you who your family was? No, I'm joking.
Yeah.
Even if you don't know what your past history is, one thing that I have to always consider is if a woman tells me she has symptoms like this, I have to assume it's one version of rheumatoid arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
The article that I didn't copy, it talked about women who eat fish versus women that don't eat fish.
Uh-huh.
The ones that ate fish, they had the least symptoms involved with rheumatoid arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
And so with rheumatoid, there's always some food that might be a trigger, whether that be corn or wheat or a dairy product or sugar. The other thing that's always very, very common with rheumatoid is the human body is harboring some type of viral infection or a bacterial infection.
I see.
And so if you went to the doctor and they did blood work, it would be so easy for them just to do a CBC with a differential and then do what's called a sedimentation rate. And they could do what's called C-reactive protein. And then they could measure the performance by doing a comprehensive metabolic panel. They could measure kidney function, which I always think is important. Anytime that there's wrist pain, I know that this is a little bit weird the way I'm going, but when you start having pain at the wrist on both sides, I start thinking kidneys, kidneys, kidneys. And so if we could take a look at your blood, when's the last time that you've been to a doctor to have like a lab test?
It's been a few years.
A few years? Well, this might be a good reason to go.
Mm-hmm.
Because they can look at all these metrics, and it may be that we can kind of get ahead of the curve just by figuring this out. But I think those tests that I mentioned, I think they'll be like a gold mine for you. If I could add maybe one or two more.
Sure.
There's one called homocysteine. Have you ever heard of that one?
I heard it you speaking about.
Okay. Well, if you request that, and maybe a vitamin D3 and a B12. I think that would cover, and maybe a lipid profile. Okay, I'm done. I keep adding to them. But I think if you could
write it down, but you don't let me.
I know. I'm so sorry. You want me to go back over them again?
Yes, please. I'd like.
There's one called a CBC with differential.
Got that.
I think it stands for complete blood count.
Okay.
The other one's called a CMP, a comprehensive metabolic panel.
Okay.
Homocysteine.
Okay.
then you can do like a one called CRP, that stands for C-reactive protein.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one, they usually shorten it, and they call it a SED rate.
SED. SED.
Sedimentation. I'm so sorry.
Okay, that's fine. See.
I'm trying to find out how much sediment you have floating around your blood, and we had to remove the sediment. You know, I make jokes about that. I tell a person, I said, okay, you got a clear glass of water here. A kid's got a mouthful of goldfish and Oreo cookies, and they come up and take a sip of your water. Are you going to have any sediment in there? And they go, yeah. Well, and that's what's floating around the blood.
Okay.
And so that would be one thing. I mentioned homocysteine.
Yes.
Vitamin D3,
B12. B3 and 12.
Mm-hmm. And they can even do what's called ANA, anti-nuclear antibodies. But I think if you had this information... Oh, one more thing. I'm so sorry.
No worries.
Man, I'm not doing my job here. I need to get with the program, Roy. They have a lab test called ferritin. F-E-R-R-T-I-N. Ferritin. I think if you had these done, they would give you quite the incredible insight as to what maybe is going on inside of your body. And you can in turn take that information and say, oh, now that I know what this means, this is my plan that I'm going to implement to reverse all this.
Okay.
Because obviously your body's telling you something's out of whack, or you wouldn't be having this horrible wrist pain.
Yes. Okay. Well, I'll do that. And that was as far as you mentioned with rheumatoid arthritis.
And the ANA will probably cover that one. But they do have what's called a rheumatoid panel, and they can look for specific markers to see if your immune system is overreacting a bit.
So is this something that can be reversed?
Well, the attitude that I have is you have no options. It has to be reversed.
Yes.
Like, even if you, if I met you on the street, I'd say, ma'am, you have no option. We have to figure out a way to get you back into a good position here.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my attitude, and that just means you've got to have a fighting spirit. So it may be that once you get the results from the blood test, you go, okay, now I know what I need to do. Yeah. Now, I'm going to ask you a question. It's not meant to be overly personal, so just kind of answer it in vague generalities, but... If you were to rate the amount of current stress that you have in your life, or maybe even measure the stress that you've had over a period of years, 10 would be the highest amount of stress, and zero would be zero. It would be no stress. How would you rate your stress levels?
Well, right now, probably a 1 or 2.
Oh, good.
Well, 0 to 15, 3,000. And
well, that,
throughout life, around 100.
Oh, no. So you're taking these factors and you're multiplying about a factor of 10 and 30.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. So you really have had your fair share of stress, haven't you?
Yes.
But all these things that I've told you on these lab tests, I really think they're going to give you very, very important markers to tell me the condition of your body. And so the way that we want to interpret them is, how do we improve the kidneys? How do we improve the liver? What do we do to clean the blood up? How do we get your body more nutrient dense? How do we help the immune system? And you know what? Even though I didn't really cover it in great detail, it is completely the job of your immune system to heal the wrist. I think I was reading an article earlier this morning before I came on, and they were talking about the use of echinacea to repair muscles. And I thought, well, how does that work? And they showed that when people took echinacea, all of a sudden, their muscles started repairing faster because it could remove your immune system could actually remove the damaged tissues and the damaged cells that are leading to the inflammation. So right now, you don't have any problems unless there's inflammation. So you've got inflammation. Your body's telling you something is in need of repair.
Correct. Okay, so I will do those steps, and then I'll call you.
Yeah, it'll be really fun to look at them. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, I'll get it done.
All right. Thank you very much, ma'am. You too. Have a great day. Thanks for your phone call. Bye-bye. I started to ask her if her family was the source of her stress. I'm just joking. And that's one of the hardest things when there's family stress. It just is. It's so common. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Dr. Morgan, a few years ago, I was diagnosed with COPD, stage 4, and I've never smoked or anything. And so, but my question is, the doctor I'm going to now has prescribed a Narvo, and it works great. But I got on the internet and I read where caffeine was bad for COPD, for your lungs and so forth. So I stopped all chocolate, and I drank only decaf coffee. So then you talked a few minutes ago about the powdered chocolate, drinking that. So tell me what I need to do in that case. I mean, is what the internet said true about caffeine?
Absolutely. I always believe everything I read on the internet. Especially the news, every bit of it.
No, of course.
I'm only teasing a little bit. Okay, so I don't know that that's going to be my top concern. I would rather major on the major areas. And so can I just have artistic license here, please? Can you just give me permission to take it and run
sure.
with it? Okay.
Absolutely.
If I saw a person that had COPD, what I would do first is I would try to determine if there's anything that they're eating that's counterproductive to the lungs. And so the first thing on my list is probably going to be dairy products, and they're going to be sugar or refined foods.
Okay, well, I don't eat a lot of sugar. I could quit having desserts and candies and
good job.
You know, different things like that just because I know sugar's bad for me. You know,
now, are you able to exercise at all?
Yes.
Do you know what the diaphragm muscle is?
Yes.
That's got to be one of the most incredible ways to improve COPD that I've ever seen before.
Okay.
But if you were to type in on the internet a term called the thoracic pump, you're going to find
spell that. Wait a minute. Spell
thoracic,
that for me. Mm-hmm.
Oh, great. I've got a spell now. Okay. Thoracic. T-H-O.
Mm-hmm.
R-A.
Okay.
C-I-C, thoracic.
Okay.
And then pump, P-U-M-P.
Mm-hmm.
Or okay. You can even, some people call it the diaphragm pump.
Okay.
A lot of times if I have a person in front of me, it's very easy for me to feel the edge of their diaphragm. And so if I feel the diaphragm and they say, I just feel pressure, and no problem. But if I touch the diaphragm and they grab my hand as quick as possible to get my fingers off their diaphragm, then you know that sucker hurts. And so if there's inflammation of the diaphragm, then I think, well, we've got to correct this. And if the lungs test weak, I'm thinking, well, we got to correct that too. And so there are compounds that are called protomorphogens. And protomorphogens are made from lung tissue from a calf usually. And so I don't know how many people I've seen that have had COPD that wasn't caused by cigarette smoking, that they were able to reverse it and get completely cleared. And what I'm referring to is truck drivers and such. They can't get their license renewed if they have significant COPD, like stage 4. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of what I focused on. But I always use protomorphogens. But I always look for how do we improve. Can I ask a simple question?
Sure.
If you don't mind, how old were you when you first noticed that you had COPD or first diagnosed?
Well, that's it. I did not notice it. I've always been, I guess, a shallow breather. And so when they told me I had COPD stage 4, I was totally surprised. And I'm 82, and that was about 4 years ago.
Okay, so have you ever tested to be anemic before?
Yes.
When was that?
Well, in my younger years.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm going to suggest to you something different right now. There's a very simple test called ferritin.
Okay, and so, heard you talk about that on
well,
the video.
Well, let me kind of go in a weird direction right here, or maybe different information. Would you agree with me that the human body is mainly composed of an element in nature called water?
Yes.
Okay. I was reading the other day, and they were saying that under normal circumstances, for somebody that's around 82, you want that number to be around 68% water. And I think that's just normal for the age. And they said if you start losing about 20% of the water out of that 68%, then you die. And I'm going, well, okay, I don't like that. And you have to understand that every good chemical reaction can only take place when you have the optimal Goldilocks just right amount of water. So you know and understand that. So minerals play a huge role. But where I'm going with this is this. Iron is essential to human life, but in our modern times, it is so easy to overdo iron because of fortification of foods. So it is very common for me to sit down with a young mother that has three children that are all very, very sick, and they have one infection after the other, and I ask, well, what did the kids eat? And the mother will say, well, they don't like carrots, and they don't like apples, and I go, well, what do they eat? And then they start again. Well, they don't really like water. And I'm going, but what do they eat? And it usually comes down to they're having cereal for breakfast, lunch, and supper. I think, and then I usually turn to the mother and say, what's your job? Anyway, it never works. It never does. So if your ferritin level is above 50, then probably what's happening is it's damaging your lungs. You got too much old rusting iron, and that's a good way to just cause continual inflammation in the lungs.
Okay, so now what's the solution?
Well, it depends on what your numbers are, but for some people it's as simple as going to donate blood, because when you donate blood, you can reduce about 10% of the load of the old rusting iron from your body. See, when you were younger, you were in the fertility years, and you had a menstrual cycle exactly every 28 days, and that would be a mechanism by which you could wash out some of the old iron. Does that make sense?
Yes.
But once you're in menopause, so we got to go back to, you didn't even know you had COPD. You were a shallow breather. Well, we're going to try to correct that. We're going to focus on doing deep, deep diaphragm breathing. And if you go onto YouTube, you can probably see 25 zillion videos on how to do that. And that way you can get the hang of it. But what I would do is, as long as you're alive, I try to improve you. So that would be one option that you have, is going through the process of donating blood. But without looking at your blood markers, I mean, I just make some assumptions. But we want the body to heal. Just like the article that I read about echinacea and chocolate. I'm reading those for one reason, because I want people to catch on that they can do something to help themselves. And so even in that study on mice that were getting older, when they took a little bit of echinacea every day, guess what happened? All the cells that clear out damaged tissue improved. And so your fortunes are going to rise or fall based on your natural killer cells doing their job. Do you need more of them? Yes. Do you need higher quality natural killer cells? Yes. Echinacea does both those for you.
Will you spell that?
Echinacea?
Yes.
Okay. I had to write it out first. E-C, mm-hmm. H-I, like high, mm-hmm. N-A, C-E-A, echinacea.
Okay. Well, now, do you recommend that I drink that every day?
You mean the cacao?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I have no problem with that whatsoever.
Okay.
You could even get like a dark chocolate bar that's like 80 to 91% cacao, and you could eat a square of that a day and get your polyphenols from that.
Okay.
All right.
And then do the deep breathing, more water,
yeah, but
and give
don't,
blood.
You cannot trust yourself to understand what deep breathing is. You need to watch as many videos, and then you go, oh, that's what it is.
Yes.
It's going to be different than you think. Anyway, but thank you for your phone call, ma'am.
Okay. Well, thank you for your help.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye.